international finance law, the euro bond market. We want to understand the nature, structure and operation of the euro bond system, which forms a key part of the larger international euro dollar market. We're going to be looking at loans and bonds, structure, parties and documentation, issue procedure, special issues and terms, and then we'll draw some final comments and conclusions. All of this is set out in further detail in the chapters and other materials provided. This, for example, is an early example of a Dutch East India bond, 1623. Very beautiful, although government lending, government debt, actually goes back to Italy in Florence and Venice in the 1100s, 1200s. Then again, it actually goes way back to ancient Mesopotamia when we had the first debt instruments being issued. We also have core aspects of this, which are demonstrated on a daily basis because of the size and power of the international bond markets, as well as the domestic bond markets with treasury bill markets in the United States and with the gilt markets in the United Kingdom. These are just some early examples of notes, including banknotes, which will then later be converted, and we have similar types of instruments in the bond area. This is a treasury stock instrument, which just demonstrates how all of this is applied and used in practice. This is the Treasury Department in the United States, which sits right beside the White House. This is a Treasury bill. This is for $100,000. This is another $1 million Treasury bond, 7 5/8%, 2002 to 2007. Loans and bonds. How can we differentiate between borrowing in the banking markets and borrowing in the capital markets? There's four general issues which are often referred to: transferability, the character of the markets of the investors, number and anonymity of investors, and issue mechanics. We can restate that in terms of issue and sale formality, documentation complexity, transferability, credit control, and default and recovery. The core decision that which arises in practice is that we can either borrow large amounts of money if we're a government or a country in the syndicated lending market, the euro loan market, or in the euro bond market by issuing some form of security-based debt, which is a bond. The core advantage is that because of the additional transferability and negotiability which exists in the bond markets, this creates additional liquidity, which means that we can often borrow more at a finer rate, at a finer coupon. So it's cheaper in the capital markets than the banking markets. However, this is dependent upon having good credit standing. If your credit standing is high, you can borrow much more and much cheaper in the capital markets. If there's any credit issues or there's any other complication with the nature and use of the funds, then we have to go to the banking markets. I've simply taken those five issues and expanded them. In terms of issue and sale formality, with loans it's simple, with bonds it's complex. Documents again, loans, basically everything turns around a single loan agreement, even though we will have multiple drawdowns, possibly hundreds if not thousands, up to, in the model I've given, example on the system, up to 26,400 separate loans under a single loan facility. There's only still one agreement. In the bond markets, there's a large number of additional parties, which means there's a large number of additional documents that we have to enter into. We also have issues with transferability. With loans, it's limited. We've either got assignment, legal or equitable, or we have no participation and sub-participation. We can, again, only assign benefits. If we want to transfer obligations, we have to novate. Bonds are inherently transferable and negotiable. That means that an acquirer can purchase, obtain perfect title so long as there was no notice of defect in prior title. Credit controls, the terms of the loan agreement, give the banks a large amount of ability to manage, oversee and control the activities of the borrower to protect their investment. Bonds is much more limited simply because investors can dispose of the bond by simply selling it back into the markets. Default and recovery, the key risk in the loan area is credit risk. That's the risk of counterparty default. That is that the borrower will not pay interest during term and repay principal on maturity. The bond market, the main risk is what we call market or position risk. That's that the value of the bond will rise or fall on the markets. Again, as we explained already, if any issues arise with regards to the investor being concerned about the performance and capability of the issuing company, it can simply dispose of the bonds. There are some degrees of control, in particular through what we call bondholders meetings, although they tend to be more formal and they simply do not allow the bondholders the same degree of control and oversight that the banks can exercise under the loan documentation. I've simply expanded this further. There's a series of more specific operational differences that we can distinguish with regards to disclosure requirements, documentation, advance of funds, currency conversion, interest, repayment, voluntary prepayment, margin protections, and again on payments and equality, warranties, covenants, events of default, modifications, transfer, prescription and governing law. We can understand the relationship, the nature between loans and bonds by examining each of these in further detail. With regards to the transactions and how we arrange and set up larger complex deals, we can consider this in terms of core structural issues. There's three main models with private placements, which is selective placements of the bonds to a limited group of professional counterparties, usually professional investors, a professional investor class, which means we do not have public listing, so we do not have to comply with all of the additional obligations which apply with regards to listing. We have two forms of admission. Admission to listing is to allow a public offer, and then you also have admission to trading, where you apply for trading to be facilitated on a particular stock market and exchange. With our preliminary prospectus offerings, this will arise with regards to larger arrangements, larger facilities. What will happen is we prepare a prospectus. The prospectus is used to try and gauge possible market reaction so that we can determine the appropriate price and the coupon to be attached, the interest rate to be paid on the bond. We can also have public impact day offerings, which are very similar but do not use a preliminary prospectus offering. The investment bankers, the investment firms, will then determine the most appropriate price to be paid on the closing, on the public day offering, and they will simply take any risk at that stage. A lot of this can be covered in practice through the selling arrangements and underwriting facilities that we will come on to mention separately. In terms of parties, we've got the managers, we have underwriters, and we'll have a selling group in larger structures. Very often, more modern systems, a lot of this will be a simple bought deal, which goes back to the private placements above. The lead bank, the arranging bank, will simply undertake in the subscription agreement with the issuer to purchase all of the bonds or notes and place them in the markets through its own existing network of contacts. In other arrangements, we'll have a selling group who'll sell the bonds into the general public, and then you'll also have a supporting underwriting group which agree to take up any residual instruments which have not been sold into the markets. In terms of the documentation then, we're going to have a prospectus or offering circular which sets out the core terms of issue. This will be entered into between the issuing company and the lead bank. The lead bank undertakes to ensure that all of the bonds are sold off into the market, either by taking them on itself under a bought deal or selling them through the selling group and through the underwriting arrangements which will be put into place. We've also got a subscription agreement between the managers and the issuer, underwriting agreements between the managers and the underwriters, selling agreements between the managers and the selling group. There'll be a separate managers agreement if there's a large number of managers, more than two. They will provide specifically for the appointment of a lead manager. If it's a large issue, we may have a separate trust deed. So we've got a trustee who acts on behalf of the bond holders. We'll have a fiscal agency agreement. If there is a trust deed, we only need a paying agency agreement. If there's no trust deed, we need a fiscal agency agreement, which creates a trust on the part of the lead bank holding the funds on behalf of the bond holders. And then in practice, we'll also have a global bond. Usually, there will be a 40-day lockup period under American tax and regulatory laws, which allows the lead bank, through their solicitors, to confirm that there is no sale of the instruments to an American citizen unless available exemptions are available. We have a 40-day lockdown period for that reason. During that period, we're going to evidence the total issue, the aggregate full amount in the form of a single temporary global bond or a temporary global note. It's an instrument sui generis in law. It represents the full amount. It may be 100 million. It may be a billion. It may be more. One note will represent all of that for a 40-day period. After that 40 days, you will then issue the definitive notes, so the definitive notes replace the temporary global. In practice now, very often, we will simply do this through dematerialized notes and bonds, which will simply be held by the two main custodians, Euroclear in Brussels, Clearstream in Luxembourg. Even if it's dematerialized, you will still have the 40-day lockdown period. In terms of the issue procedure, we can understand this with regards to the lead manager preparing the documentation. We'll have the launch date when we send out the invitational telexes. The managers and issuers will consult. They'll agree the coupon, that's the interest rate and the price. Is the bonds, the notes, are they going to be issued at par, at face value, at a discount above or at a discount below or at a premium above? Very often, for example, you can have deep discount bonds or notes. Deep discount means that you effectively roll up the interest into the price of the bond and you deduct that on initial issuance. So the deep discount may be 30%. The effect of that is that you're going to be paying the interest in the form of a larger payment of principal at the end. So it's issued at a substantial discount to that on initial bringing to the market. We call that a deep discount bond. The advantage of that is that the investors do not have to pay corporation tax or income tax as they receive interest payments, because all of the interest is rolled up into the value of the bond and they receive all of that paid on maturity when everything is redeemed. We agree the prospectus. In a loan arrangement, we have what's called an information memorandum. Information memorandum sets out all of the details with regards to the borrower's business, and the use and purpose of the funds, which will explain how the borrowing will be repaid over time. We include all of that in an information memorandum. In a euro loan deal, with regards to a bond market deal or a note deal, we'll have a prospectus or an admission listing particulars if this is also to be listed on a specific stock market. So the prospectus corresponds with the information memorandum. They will generally have very similar terms and content. The selling group will agree how much to be sold, will enter into the trust deed and the fiscal agency agreement. If we're going to be listing, we'll have listing confirmed with the relevant stock market and exchange. Then we'll have the closing, where we deliver the documents in exchange for, in the old days when we didn't have dematerialized systems, exchange for the temporary global bond or the temporary global note. And then 40 days later, after the lockdown, we'll issue the definitive bonds, which replace the global bond. In practice, all of this would be held in any case with the two principal custodians, Euroclear and Clearstream. What will then happen is all secondary trading is carried out across the accounts of these two custodians. And there's also a bridge in the form of an optical cable between Euroclear and Clearstream so that they can buy and sell bonds across the accounts of different parties on each of the relevant systems. Smaller banks and brokers who want to buy and sell bonds who are not members of Euroclear and Clearstream, they will deal through a member of each of these documents on an agency basis. It's a series of additional legal issues which can arise: stabilisation, listing, negotiability of bonds, governing law and negotiability, clearing systems. I deal with all of this in the chapter in detail. Stabilisation is to do with creating a protected market up until the final issuance of the bonds between the initial notification. The key point is that a lot of this can be pre-sold in what we call a grey market. Selling in the grey market can possibly interfere with the final closing price, so the managers are allowed to try and adjust the markets through activities which would otherwise constitute market manipulation, but it's made legal in this case because they're only stabilising the price of the bond or the note, so we call that stabilisation. That's to protect the price during the grey market before final issuance. Listing. We're going to apply for listing where we want to create an additional larger possible investor base. Very large insurance companies and other professional investors are restricted in the various asset classes that they can purchase. They can purchase a certain amount in higher risk areas, but if we want our bonds to be sold to them on an open equal basis, very often we're going to apply for listing just to change the characteristics and the character of the bond itself, because if it's listed, they can then purchase it. Whether we want to actually list it on the stock market itself very often could be irrelevant, but by having it listed, it means that a larger class of investors can purchase it, and therefore we can sell more and at a cheaper or final rate. Negotiability is determined by market practice. The courts have since recognised that it's the market reputation and the market treatment, the market reception that determines the negotiability of a bond. That goes back to Goodwin versus Robertson, 1876. In Picker versus London and County Co, for example, Prussian bonds were recognised as being negotiable in the Prussian markets, but not in the London markets, therefore no negotiability was conferred. As we've already explained, negotiability means that we can acquire a perfect title so long as we obtain the bonds without any notice of prior defect in title, which means so long as we act in good faith. There was a number of other important decisions in this area. For example, Edelstein versus Schuller, Bingham J confirmed that usage of the markets determines the negotiability. It's not a matter of law, it's not a matter of party agreement, it's market treatment. We also need to consider governing law and negotiability issues. In all international financial transactions, you will have a governing law clause to determine which law is going to apply and govern the rights and obligations of the parties. You will also have a jurisdiction clause which determines which courts will be able to consider any dispute that may arise. They may be different. So, for example, you could select New York law but have London as the jurisdiction. In that case, the London courts, the commercial court in London, will apply New York law as governing the terms of that bond, or vice versa. It's very common to have them the same, so English law and London courts, but that's not necessary. What tends to happen now, in certain markets whereby you're raising a lot of money in local markets, for example, in the Middle East or in Asia, if there's a larger investor group that you're appealing to, you may want to have the governing law there, although you may still pick out the New York law or London for jurisdiction purposes. And then separate issues arise with regards to custody and clearing. As we've mentioned already, there's two main custodians, Euroclear in Brussels and Clearstream in Luxembourg. They tend to hold most of the bonds in the international bond market. They can do so physically, so we will call that immobilisation. Rather than allow for the definitive notes to be physically held and transferred by and between investors, they are immobilised in the vaults held by Euroclear and Clearstream. We can also have dematerialisation, which is where everything is issued in electronic form, although again, the accounts are registered with the electronic systems managed by Euroclear and Clearstream. You can also have that's dematerialisation. Then there's other types of issues which can arise with regards to how we manage and deal with these in practice. One of them is disintermediation. That arises where, for example, if you have an initial bond program, you'll bring in the lead bank to set up the system, agree all the documentation, and provide for the initial bonds to be offered. But what you can also do is this: if you have shorter notes, possibly 5-year notes, 3-year notes down to 1 year, or commercial paper up to 1 year, because you need to roll the debt over much more often in the markets, In those cases, you'll set this up in the form of a facility or a program arrangement whereby the lead bank does not have to come back each time the company wants to issue new short bonds or notes into the market or commercial paper. We call that disintermediation. We disintermediate because the lead bank doesn't have to come back because everything is set up in the form of a program or issue facility. I then simply provided additional information on the nature and terms and conditions which are attached to the bond. So the face of the bond, the fiscal agency agreement, form and transfer, covenants, pari passu, negative pledge, information, interest, redemption, perpetuals, voluntary redemption, early redemption, purchase by issuer, payments, prescription, events of default, acceleration and enforcement, and notices and governing law. And with all of that, we can understand the nature, structure and operation of the euro bond market. I provided a separate chapter on all of this with additional information and links on the system. This remains one of the most important, largest financial markets in the world. All large companies and many of the governments in the world have to raise funds. How do they do that? They do it through the international bond market, the international Eurobond market. A lot of this is still based in London and it continues to grow and evolve. It will always be in place. It will always operate simply because of the funding needs of all of the participant institutions in this market. This remains a highly exciting, important area of finance and international finance. All we need to understand is the more specific, detailed nature of the law and rights and obligations of all of the parties concerned. All of this is dealt with in the chapter and supporting materials provided.